President Donald Trump and Vice President Kamala Harris had never met face-to-face before their debate last night in Philadelphia. The candidates traded jabs on the economy, reproductive rights, and immigration. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Lucy May. What were the standout moments for each candidate, and which messages from last night's debate resonated with local voters? Joining me now to talk about that are WVXU senior political analyst Howard Wilkinson. Thanks for being here, Howard.
Thank you.
Miami University Assistant Professor of Political Science, Ann Whitesell. Welcome back, Ann.
Thanks, Lucy.
And University of Kentucky Associate Professor of Political Science, Stephen Voss. Thanks for being here, Stephen.
Thanks for having me, Lucy.
Howard, most voters seem pretty set on which candidate they're supporting this year, but who was the real audience for this debate?
Well, I heard Bob Barnett, who is a longtime Democratic strategist and has run a lot of campaigns since the 1970s. I heard him yesterday talking about, look, this whole debate boils down to the real audience, which is about 20,000 voters in each of seven battleground states who have yet to make up their minds. And that's who this was for. It wasn't for the hardcore Trump people. It wasn't for the hardcore Harris people. It was for those people. And once we start seeing some numbers coming out of this thing, we'll have a better idea of what was effective and what was not.
Mm-hmm. Let's get to one of the biggest issues in this election, the economy, and what the candidates said their plans are.
Donald Trump has no plan for you. And when you look at his economic plan, it's all about tax breaks for the richest people. I am offering what I describe as an opportunity economy. And the best economists in our country, if not the world, have reviewed our relative plans for the future of America. What Goldman Sachs has said is that Donald Trump's plan would make the economy worse. Mine would strengthen the economy. Donald Trump actually has no plan for you because he is more interested in defending himself than he is in looking out for you.
That's just a soundbite. They gave her that to say. Look, I went to the Wharton School of Finance, and many of those professors, the top professors, think my plan is a brilliant plan. It's a great plan. It's a plan that's going to bring up our worth, our value as a country. It's going to make people want to be able to go and work and create jobs and create a lot of good, solid money for our country. And just to finish off, she doesn't have a plan. She copied Biden's plan, and it's like four sentences, like run, spot, run. Four sentences that are just, oh, we'll try and lower taxes. She doesn't have a plan. Take a look at her plan. She doesn't have a plan.
Stephen, there's a lot there, but have economists come to a consensus about which approach would be better for the overall economy, whether it's Vice President Harris's plan or former President Trump's plan?
For sure, economists would agree that parts of Trump's plan would have downstream effects on consumers. You know, it's not the clip we just heard, but the fight over his tariffs, or what Harris calls his sales tax, pretty much agreed upon widely that if Trump's tariffs kicked in, we would see prices rise both directly on goods that received a tariff, but also indirectly because the inputs that go into things we buy, things that are imported to be added to manufactured goods, those prices would go up. I don't think you can really give as generic a judgment of what economists are saying about all the things each candidate's saying they're going to do, though.
Mm-hmm. Abortion rights were a big part of last night's debate, too, with former President Trump saying the U.S. Supreme Court acted with courage.
But what I did is something for 52 years. They've been trying to get Roe v. Wade into the states. And through the genius and heart and strength of six Supreme Court justices, we were able to do that. Now, I believe in the exceptions for rape, incest, and life of the mother. I believe strongly in it. Ronald Reagan did also. 85% of Republicans do exceptions. Very important. But we were able to get it, and now states are voting on it. And for the first time, you're going to see, look, this is an issue that's torn our country apart for 52 years. Every legal scholar, every Democrat, every Republican, liberal, conservative, they all wanted this issue to be brought back to the states where the people could vote. And that's what happened. Now, Ohio, the vote was somewhat liberal. Kansas, the vote was somewhat liberal, much more liberal than people would have thought. But each individual state is voting. It's the vote of the people now. It's not tied up in the federal government. I did a great service in doing it. It took courage to do it. And the Supreme Court had great courage in doing it. And I give tremendous credit to those six justices.
Let's hear from the vice president now.
Donald Trump hand-selected three members of the United States Supreme Court with the intention that they would undo the protections of Roe v. Wade. And they did exactly as he intended. And now in over 20 states, there are Trump abortion bans, which make it criminal for a doctor or nurse to provide health care. In one state, it provides prison for life. Trump abortion bans that make no exception even for rape and incest, which understand what that means. A survivor of a crime of violation to their body does not have the right to make a decision about what happens to their body next. That is immoral. And one does not have to abandon their faith or deeply held beliefs to agree. The government, and Donald Trump certainly, should not be telling a woman what to do with her body. I have talked with women around our country. You want to talk about this is what people wanted? Pregnant women who want to carry a pregnancy to term, suffering from a miscarriage, being denied care in an emergency room because the healthcare providers are afraid they might go to jail, and she's bleeding out in a car in the parking lot? She didn't want that. Her husband didn't want that. A 12 or 13-year-old survivor of incest being forced to carry a pregnancy to term? They don't want that. And I pledge to you, when Congress passes a bill to put back in place the protections of Roe v. Wade, as President of the United States, I will proudly sign it into law. But understand, if Donald Trump were to be reelected, he will sign a national abortion ban. Understand, in his Project 2025, there would be a national abortion, a monitor that would be monitoring your pregnancies, your miscarriages. I think the American people believe that certain freedoms, in particular, the freedom to make decisions about one's own body, should not be made by the government.
And have legal scholars been calling on the court to return the question of abortion to the states?
Not universally. There are definitely some who would probably prefer it to be at the states, but I mean, Donald Trump makes it seem as if everyone agrees. There are people who are in favor of abortion rights who disagree with the way that Roe was decided, and so they weren't particularly happy with the reasoning behind Roe, but they certainly didn't want the Dobbs decision. He's definitely kind of overgeneralizing there. I don't think there's anywhere near unanimous consent about who should be deciding abortion policy.
Yeah. And was this a place where the two candidates distinguished themselves pretty dramatically during the debate, in your view? This issue of abortion?
I think a couple things stood out to me. First of all, Trump saying that he was for exceptions, I thought was very interesting because his own VP candidate, his pick, J.D. Vance, has said that he's not for exceptions. And lots of pro-life organizations are not for exceptions. So Trump is trying to walk, I think, a fine line there. I think he very much knows that this is not a good issue for him. And then Harris, I think, did a really good job of kind of telling stories about what happens when abortion is banned, right? So telling stories to demonstrate the harm in turning things back to the states. And I do think they both kind of separated themselves in that way. I think Kamala Harris talked about abortion in a way that many Democrats wish Joe Biden would have talked about abortion, but he never did.
We're talking about last night's presidential debate. Did you hear anything in the debate that helped you decide how you'll vote in November? Give us a call at 513-419-7100 or email talk at wvxu.com. energypolicy.org. Energy policy, and in particular fracking, that's a big issue in Ohio and Pennsylvania.
Let's talk about fracking because we're here in Pennsylvania. I made that very clear in 2020. I will not ban fracking. I have not banned fracking as Vice President of the United States. And in fact, I was the tie-breaking vote on the Inflation Reduction Act, which opened new leases for fracking. My position is that we have got to invest in diverse sources of energy so we reduce our reliance on foreign oil. We have had the largest increase in domestic oil production in history because of an approach that recognizes that we cannot over-rely on foreign oil.
Fracking? She's been against it for 12 years. Defund the police. She's been against that forever. She gave all that stuff up very wrongly, very horribly, and everybody's laughing at it, okay? They're all laughing at it. She gave up at least 12 and probably 14 or 15 different policies.
So, Howard, the former president claims the vice president, Vice President Harris, has flip-flopped on this issue of fracking. Has she?
Well, I think there's, you know, some reason to say yes, you know, that her position has changed over the years. I don't know that it's quite as dramatic as what Trump portrayed it to be. And to take it all, take that and move on to all these other subjects just seemed like nonsense. I mean, it didn't make a whole lot of sense. Mm-hmm.
Stephen, former President Trump is also claiming that, you know, Vice President Harris has flip-flopped on a lot of issues. How did you read that? Was that an effective line of attack for him?
Well, Trump didn't deliver the attack effectively. It could have possibly been effective. But, you know, our listeners have now listened to, three clips from Donald Trump. And what they've had in common is the rambling, is the inability to really focus the listener on what he's trying to say and to communicate. The reason, you know, two-thirds of the people who watched that debate, who were polled and asked, you know, who won the debate, the reason they're saying Trump lost and Harris won, it's not because of the content of what he's saying. It's because of what we're hearing in terms of his inability to deliver a message.
Stephen, do you think that the former president was able to portray Vice President Harris successfully as a progressive radical? I know that was another line of attack that folks were expecting.
No, that's what I'm saying. I mean, he tried to. It's possible he could have done it effectively with the content in her past, but he just didn't deliver those punches at all. It was a weak delivery. Previously we were hearing about how the voters who need to process this, the voters who are up for grabs with this debate, are small in number and they're not terribly politically engaged people. Nothing Trump said about Harris's past is going to penetrate to those swing voters.
We're going to continue this conversation after a short break. And later in the program, is marijuana more potent these days? We'll look at the THC levels. This is Cincinnati Edition. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Lucy May. We're continuing our conversation about last night's presidential debate. My guests are WVXU senior political analyst Howard Wilkinson, Miami University assistant professor of political science Ann Whitesell, and University of Kentucky associate professor of political science Stephen Voss. You can join the conversation by calling 513-419-7100, or you can email talk@wvxu.org. Another thing that came up in last night's debate, former President Trump made this debunked assertion about Springfield, Ohio, that I think we need to address.
In Springfield, they're eating the dogs, the people that came in. They're eating the cats. They're eating the pets of the people that live there. And this is what's happening in our country, and it's a shame.
I just want to clarify here. You bring up Springfield, Ohio, and ABC News did reach out to the city manager there. He told us there have been no credible reports of specific claims of pets being harmed, injured, or abused by individuals within the immigrant community.
And what do you think this says about former President Trump that he brought this up during the debate?
I think one thing it suggests is that he's clearly in a bubble when it comes to his media consumption and the people he's talking to. So I was watching this debate with a room full of students at Miami, and most of them just laughed at this because they had no idea what he was talking about. And I think this shows that, like, if you're not extremely online or paying a lot of attention to everything that Donald Trump says and everything that like the right says, you don't hear all of these things. And so I think it demonstrates that, again, he's very much like just getting confirmation of his own beliefs. He's not hearing from anyone who's telling him no, or who is suggesting that like he change his messaging. It's also demonstrating that he has really horrible views of immigrants. But I think, you know, even broader than that, it demonstrates that he really does live in a bubble.
And I know you had mentioned to one of our producers that you were watching, one of the things you were watching for during this debate was how former President Trump treated Vice President Harris, kind of how he talked about women generally. What are your thoughts? How did that go for him?
Yeah, I think Kamala Harris did a really good job of like inserting basically bait in some of her answers to try to get him riled up. And he took it every single time. And so he would just go launch on these rants. And, you know, as Stephen said, like he would be rambling about things that weren't, you know, they weren't policy and they weren't convincing voters. He did, you know, say things about her. It wasn't quite as bad as I expected, but I think maybe my expectations were very low. But they did bring up her race. The moderators asked about her race, and he did kind of step back into that, saying like, "Well, she can be whatever she wants to be." So it was kind of the same thing that we've seen from him throughout this campaign.
You know, I agree with Anne on that. Just from the very start, when they walked out on stage and she approached him to shake hands, and you could see on his face, he wanted to be anywhere else in the world, but standing right there at that moment. Earlier in the day, I have a high school friend that I went to high school many, many years ago with in Dayton, Ohio. He posted something. He's a big Trump supporter. He posted something on Facebook saying that Donald Trump would make her cry tonight. And wasn't crying. I didn't see any crying. I saw a commanding performance, somebody who was totally in charge from start to finish. Mm-hmm. And he was on the defensive continually, every moment of that time. I don't see how anybody could look at this thing and see anything else.
And Stephen, you mentioned that of people surveyed right after the debate, 2/3 said that Kamala Harris won, Donald Trump lost. There were certainly points during the debate, though, where moderators asked the vice president direct questions about the former president's arguments, including the Biden administration keeping Trump-era tariffs on China. And she didn't always respond directly, answer the question directly. Stephen, what did you make of that?
Yeah, I wouldn't say that Vice President Harris really knocked this one out of the park, in terms of her debate performance, but just the imperfections in what she did were so dwarfed by Trump's performance that we're really not talking about this debate in the normal way we would if it had been a fairly decent performance by both candidates and we were picking apart for the little flaws. You know, yes, the polls said Harris won, but maybe more interesting is what happened in the investment markets. There are these betting markets where people buy stock in the candidates, and the price of that stock suggests their belief in the probability that the candidate will win. And people started selling off Donald Trump stock and buying up Kamala Harris stock at a rapid rate as that debate progressed. I mean, the people who had money on the line and we could watch their behavior, they clearly were speaking as to who was winning and who was losing that debate.
We do have a caller on the line. Hi, Jack. Thanks for calling. What did you want to say?
Hello, Lucy. I'm not an undecided voter. I'm for Harris all the way. But if you're looking for something out of a debate that would sway some undecided voters, I think it is the comment about the immigrants eating dogs and cats. It is such a vicious, demeaning, venal comment made by Trump. I think it shows the venality of his character. And it also shows how dumb he is, because he picks up anything from Breitbart or far-right places of the Internet, things like this that are not backed by any facts. And he wraps himself around them, and his people can't get him to not talk about things like that.
Mm. Thank you, Jack. I'm going to pause there because we got a lot of ground to cover, but I really appreciate your listening. Appreciate your sharing those thoughts with us. Stephen, we talked a little bit about, I think it was Anne who brought up that it seemed like the vice president was trying to kind of bait the former president. I wonder what your thoughts were about that. Do you feel like some of her strategy was to fluster the former president or cause him to stumble? I mean, the fact that she brought up his rallies seemed pretty intentional.
Yeah, my guess is that Harris was going in knowing that the best points she could score would be the points that Trump gave her. You know, that self-inflicted wounds by Trump was going to do more damage than anything she actually could say. Now, as it turned out, I think he knew he was performing poorly, and as the debate progressed, he was more and more desperately trying to claw back ground. It felt like he was rambling more, he was throwing more things into individual comments. She really didn't need to bait him very hard because he was just walking into every opportunity.
Hmm. What do you think, Howard?
Well, I think one really telling moment was when she turned to the camera and said, look, I would advise you people, this is an odd request, but to every one of you should go to a Donald Trump rally and listen to what the man says and listen to all this talk about Hannibal Lecter and electric boats and, you know, wind causing cancer, et cetera, et cetera. And I thought that was a very effective argument because, you know, she says, just go listen to him and you'll see what we're talking about.
Hmm. And how did the vice president's history as a prosecutor play into her performance? Do you think she succeeded in kind of framing herself as the prosecutor candidate against the candidate who has convictions on his record?
Yeah, I mean, at one point she specifically brought up his convictions to contrast, you know, him being wanting to be tough on crime, right? And then that being kind of ironic given his own legal troubles. But I think, you know, her background as a prosecutor probably came in handy more in terms of, you know, asking questions, or I should say, you know, phrasing statements in a way that she knew the kind of response that she would get from him. And, you know, being very, just like throughout the whole thing, being very calm and, you know, not ruffled by, you could hear him, you know, kind of speaking when it wasn't his turn, right? And she didn't seem thrown off by that, even though his, you know, mic was muted, you could hear him. I think we've seen her, especially when she was in the Senate, having very good lines of questioning and making people uncomfortable. And I think she did the same thing here, even if she wasn't directly questioning Trump. By her statements, you know, Trump felt like he had to respond to that, and that helped her a lot.
Stephen, Kentucky's been a ruby red state for presidential elections for years. Ohio isn't considered a swing state anymore either. What were some of your big takeaways for local voters after last night's debate? Do you think there are pieces that will really make a difference for people who are voting?
But what happens at the top of the tickets, you know, filters down to other races on the ballot. So even in states that, you know, in the Electoral College for the presidential vote, are fairly predictable. There will be local races, maybe congressional races, maybe state legislative races, as we have coming up in Kentucky, where the enthusiasm that Harris has been able to generate, and also the demoralization on the Republican side as Trump proceeds to mishandle the election, this could flip some legislative seats. It could make a difference. You know, one thing the Republicans need to worry about if Kamala Harris is on her way to the White House is having the Senate to force her to the table to negotiate. And now they need to worry about shoring up their position in Senate races in places like Texas and Florida that really the Republicans shouldn't have to be worrying about.
Well, I've been talking with WVXU senior political analyst Howard Wilkinson, Miami University assistant professor of political science Ann Whitesell, and University of Kentucky associate professor of political science Stephen Voss. Thank you all so much for your time today.
Thank you.
Thank you, Lucy.
Thanks.
Up next, is marijuana more potent these days? We'll look at THC levels. This is Cincinnati Edition.